Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Again, we're going to be doing this every Saturday at 10 o'clock Central with my buddy Adam Mockler. Make sure you go follow him on YouTube. We're going to talk about a couple things. We're going to get into the tariff news yesterday with the Supreme Court striking it all down. We're going to talk about the latest in the Epstein files. We're going to talk about this thing with J.D. Vance inviting the Pope to come to America's 250th birthday celebration and getting smacked down by the holiest person on the planet, let's say, from the great city of Chicago, where Adam and I both live. While we're getting started, do us a favor, hit that heart button for us so that more people get a chance to join. Tell us where you're watching this from, because we always like knowing that. And leave comments so that we can respond as well. Adam, let's just start here. Like, yesterday was a crazy day on the tariff front. Donald Trump is pissed and lashing out at the Supreme Court because they struck down his tariffs. Now he's imposing a 10% blanket tariff on the entire world, he says. I don't know what mechanism he's planning to use that to do that with, but walk me through your reaction yesterday.
Yeah, so Rupert Murdoch's paper called this the worst day of Donald Trump's entire presidency because this was an uprooting of his core tariff policy that in his mind he could use as leverage in any situation. Now, these tariffs were, of course, a disaster. For the average American family, there was a $1,000 increase in their price of goods in 2025. Due to the tariffs. In 2026, it was projected to be an extra $1,600 for the average American family because, surprise, the tariffs are paid for by the companies who are importing the items, not the other countries. I can't believe Trump supporters are still using that argument, but Congress essentially has the ability to place taxes on the American people, and solely Congress. The president cannot unilaterally place a new tariff or a new tax, basically the same thing at this point, because we don't want that. We don't want the president to have that much control over the economy. Trump tried to take control of that using some Emergency Powers Act that says he could declare national emergency, but there was no national emergency. He basically just placed a tax on the American people. So Congress in a the Supreme Court in a 6-3 decision said Congress has control of taxes, not the president of the United States. Super simple ruling. Trump came out and essentially declared war against the courts. I mean, this is a type of rhetoric where if like any Democrat would have been saying this stuff, Trump would call them an insurrectionist. Just imagine in your mind if Barack Obama or like let's give like Ilhan Omar. If Ilhan Omar said the Supreme Court's family should be ashamed, the Supreme Court is illegitimate, they would literally be calling for a deportation. They already do that. Could you imagine if any Democrat had said this? They would be freaking the hell out. But Trump has the ability to basically declare insurrection against the Supreme Court because the Supreme Court said, hey, you can't just place taxes on the American people willy-nilly. One more thing is that the tariffs that he's trying to place are so counterproductive, they're nuking the U.S.'s reputation on the global stage. That's obvious. But I had an economist that I know explain it to me in this way, that before the tariffs before Trump took office, the average tariff rate across the globe was about 2.5%. About 2.5% among all countries, if you average the entire globe. Now, Trump has ramped up the U.S. tariffs to, on average, be like 40%, or now at least 10%, right? And that creates two trade zones for the world. A big red zone around the United States where people say, do not go through the United States. Do not trade with the United States. This is a big red no-no zone. This is a massively increased tariff zone. Now the rest of the world, by comparison, looks pretty nice. The rest of the world only has about a 2.5% tariff. In fact, that's why you see Canada beginning to partner with China. That's why you see certain countries creating new alliances because... at the end of the day, there's two trade zones, the United States and the rest of the world. That's Trump's fault. Trump has turned the United States into a pariah on the global stage, and the Supreme Court just tried to save him from that, just tried to save him, and they did, and now he's trying to basically shoot himself in the foot again.
Yeah, and I think more importantly, congressional Republicans refuse to do their job because they've had the right to terminate these tariffs at any time over the course of the last year. And Democrats have been arguing these tariffs are illegal. Now they've been validated by the Supreme Court that it named them illegal, except for Alito, Thomas, and Kavanaugh, who are, in my opinion, just Republican political operatives who will vote based on whatever the GOP wants them to do. My question for you, Adam, and just for the administration is, where's my refund check?
Yep.
Because if the average American lost $1,000 to $2,000 last year because of these stupid tariffs, then I want my money back. And I think the 60% of Americans who live paycheck to paycheck should also want their money back. And while we're on the topic, where's my DOGE check that I was promised? I was promised a DOGE check at the beginning of last year. I was promised a tariff check in Q3 and Q4 last year because, according to Donald Trump, we collected so much money we were going to pay down the entire national debt and have enough money to kick out everybody $1,000 check. So where the hell is my money? Where the hell is your money? Where's everybody else's money? And I don't know if you saw Scott Bessent, who's the Treasury Secretary, was asked yesterday if the American people are going to get their money back. And he had the smuggest look on his face while he said no.
Yep.
So if there are refunds, the refunds are going to go back to corporate America when corporate America passed the costs onto the consumer. So again, to me, I hate to just make this about everything, but it's the Epstein class wins again. Like, yep. The Epstein class wins on both sides of it. Oh, tariffs go up, they'll raise prices. We pay it because we got to buy milk and bread and everybody needs a car and stuff like that in this country. And then who gets the refund? They also get the refund for Trump's shitty tariffs. It's maddening to me.
From a messaging perspective, it's kind of a disaster for the Trump administration because they haven't gotten to reap any of the benefits of any tariffs. We've gotten nothing. And all they've gotten are now Democrats have a really good messaging tactic heading into the midterms and the 2020 election, which is, where's my refund? I think Democrats need super simple, intuitive messaging like that. Something that Micah and I have been working on is a universal tax rebate, where the Democrats run on closing the special loopholes for billionaires. There's a bunch of loopholes billionaires are able to take advantage of. And then we redistribute that money to the American people. So imagine a Democratic candidate who's like, hey, we are going to have free trade so that tariffs aren't like ruining the American people. We're going to give you back the money that Trump took from you all, and we're going to make sure that billionaires aren't able to just like rake in all of this money and hoard it. I think there's a really strong Democrat message that can be cultivated around these tariffs and around Donald Trump's insane missteps with the U.S. economy. You know, unemployment is up since Trump took office. Inflation, yep, up since Trump took office. All of it is up since Trump took office because he hasn't done anything substantive. One of the reasons why unemployment is up, by the way, is because businesses don't have as much money to hire staff, to train staff, because they're paying tariffs. So it's all just so destructive for the U.S. economy. And the Supreme Court is almost saving Trump from himself. And you made a really good point there that this is only the Democrats being vindicated this entire time. And Democrats and maybe like Republican Don Bacon, who's the only one who's kind of spoken up about it. But all of the Democrats have been saying that not only is this unconstitutional, not only is this illegal and unproductive, but that the Supreme Court will rule against Donald Trump. And that's what happened.
Yeah. And frankly, it's ridiculous that it took the Supreme Court to rule as long as they did. And I seriously doubt they would have taken as long if this was a Democratic president trying to, yep, do this. I mean, they ruled so quickly to strike down. And Adam, this is long before your time. I don't even know how old you would have been at the time. But when they struck down the public option for Obamacare, mm-hmm, imagine if Barack Obama's response was to berate the Supreme Court and declare, yeah, war on them like Trump did yesterday. I mean, Trump blamed the Supreme Court yesterday for this ruling. They claimed foreign interference, as if they were trying to enrich people or taking bribes. They accused them of doing it for political correctness reasons, which I don't even know what the hell that means. I mean, this guy is so deeply out of his mind and unable to live in reality. And somebody brought it up in the comments here, but I was on News Nation last night and I got asked if I thought Donald Trump was taking this personally. And I was like, of course he's taking it personally. Yeah. He takes everything personally. If you look at him the wrong way, he's going to fire you and kick you out of his office. But more importantly, he makes everything about him. So the tariffs were about, how do I gain as much control over the American economy? How do I gain as much control and power and leverage in these negotiations with foreign governments? Because if Canada pisses me off, I can jack a 15% tariff on them in retaliation. And now he's lost that. So he's weaker than he's ever been before. And he's officially a lame duck president.
Yep. And that was that performance was a display of weakness when he came, yes, out there yesterday. Did you see how they turned down the lights? They like made sure to dim the lights.
They did, yeah.
You want it? I mean, this is just so Trumpian. He wants to be intense. He wants to put on a show. He doesn't want it to be bright. He wants to come out there with a dark tone and threaten the Supreme Court. The president of the United States was threatening the Supreme Court. What was the quote that he said that really pissed me off? It was, he said they didn't have the courage. Yeah. He said about the Supreme Court, they didn't have the courage to do what needed to be done to like save our country. This is exactly what he said about Mike Pence 5 years ago on, yes, January 6th, that Mike Pence didn't have the courage. So when I use the word insurrection, I don't it might not fit the exact definition with the Supreme Court thing, but I just mean the president using his power to usurp either the vote of the American people, the Supreme Court's votes, or the Constitution. We have seen Donald Trump do that time and time and time again. And in my eyes, that is basically insurrection. Stephen Miller would call it insurrection the other way around. The president of the United States should not be trying to listen. If you want to say like you respectfully disagree with the Supreme Court, that's one thing. Like, oh, the Supreme Court's decision didn't go my way. I think Biden had so many Supreme Court decisions that didn't go his way, and he was quiet about it. He said, that is how the court works, even though we disagree. Trump went out there and he attacked the Supreme Court. I could even argue that he made a thinly veiled threat to the family members of the Supreme Court when he said that their family should be ashamed. You know how many families have had to remove themselves from American politics because of Trump's attacks? Think about Marjorie Taylor Greene. Her family was attacked. Her son was attacked. Her son got messages, death threats. Think about, I mean, not that I'm defending Marjorie, but nobody's son deserves that. What the hell? Especially if you're just being in the political realm. Who else? The Cheney family. Like the Cheneys have had to remove themselves. Adam Kinzinger does a lot of politics now, but he tweets about it, but they kind of removed themselves from public politics. A lot of people, due to the Trump administration's threats, the Pence family, Mike Pence doesn't really say much anymore because him and his daughter almost died. So the point is, I can make a very strong argument that Trump was trying to threaten the Supreme Court and their families.
Well, and I would add here too, like Thomas Massie, the way they've attacked him on Epstein, FBI Director Kash Patel basically told Thomas Massie, if you don't drop this, we're going to start charging your staff with fraud, which is unbelievable to me. And not to make it about myself, but like I face death threats and you face death threats. And Laura Loomer, who is a close political advisor of Donald Trump, literally threatened my son in a private DM to me that I made public, had to have the police come to my house and deal with it. So when Trump says courage, what he actually means is fear. He wants everybody in America to be scared to stand up to him and to give him more and more power so that he can do whatever he wants as a king. And when we call him a fascist, and like I'm someone who calls him a fascist, I know you are too, Adam, like the right wing loses their mind. But it is the most apt description of who he is, because he wants the Supreme Court to just lay down and say, no, you can have authority over tariffs. You can do whatever you want. You'll never be prosecuted or held accountable. And we're not going to do that. And somebody in the comments brought up the murder of Alex Pretty. The reason that Bovino and Homan and Miller have allowed ICE agents to attack peaceful protesters the way that they have is because they want you to think twice when you go out and record an ICE agent, when you go out and protest what they're doing. They want you to be scared. Same reason they went after our friend Don Lemon, Adam, is they want independent journalists and independent content creators like you and I to be scared to go on Substack and speak out. And the right answer in these moments, because it's a million act of resistance, is every time it happens, go tell them to fuck off. Because that's all you can do. Tell them to fuck off, because if you give them a little bit of an inch, they're going to take a mile and a mile and a mile. And the way we win is by saying no over and over again and hoping that the system doesn't buckle. And yesterday in the Supreme Court, the system didn't buckle. We had just enough in a very rigged Supreme Court to take back control of at least the emergency powers on tariffs, which is a good thing.
Yeah, and you're right. Do not obey in advance. They're trying to create a chilling effect, which is where you have this perceived threat of punishment. So in advance, you kind of curb your rights or your ability to speak. That's why they're attacking multiple different comedians, multiple different media companies. And that's why, to change topics a bit, we need to be very, very clear about the Epstein class and the accountability that needs to be held there. The amount of files that have released over the past month have been so incredibly overwhelming and voluminous that we're trying to create a document at Mockler Media to kind of list out everything. And I know that exists online, but we're just trying to create an index to understand everything that is released and make sure that we have accountability for the victims and the survivors. But what are the updates? Fill me in, because I've been traveling for the past day or two. Any new releases?
Yeah, well, I mean, I haven't seen any new releases. I think the biggest stuff on Epstein that I've been tracking, obviously, is the former Prince Andrew being arrested in the UK. What I'll add there is, one, it shows that, again, Europe is leading the way on accountability for people's relationship and the crimes they committed with Epstein. Now, the only reason that they're able to get Andrew is because, one, Ro Khanna and Thomas Massie in Congress made the DOJ release these files, which showed that he had broken the law because he violated his public office when he was a trade envoy. And he gave secret information to Epstein that he shouldn't have. So that's why he's being punished. But again, if a prince can be arrested, then so can the president of the United States, so can the former president of the United States and Bill Clinton, if we can prove that he did something wrong, so can the richest person on the planet and Elon Musk. There should be nobody that's above the law. And then I think the other thing that I'm tracking here that I find really scary is that there's this ranch in New Mexico that Jeffrey Epstein had that was sold to a GOP mega donor whose son works in the Trump White House, and the guy is close to Steve Bannon, and they've been refusing to cooperate with authorities because there's a lot of intense rumors and theories about bodies that are buried at this ranch, that the New Mexico state legislature voted unanimously, I believe, to put the attorney general in charge of a special prosecutory investigative unit to go investigate that ranch because they want to see what's there. So the AG in New Mexico, his name is Raul Torres. He's basically the most important attorney general in the country right now because he might be able to find some of the smoking guns that we've been missing on what they're hiding in the Epstein files. Because I don't know that they're no longer hiding the abuse of kids. I think what they're hiding is murder. Yeah. That's what I think it is.
I've seen a lot of speculation about that and a lot of people talking about that. Epstein bought a bunch of chemicals before he died, too.
Yeah, sulfuric acid.
Yes. A lot of weird stuff going on there. Here's what really bothers me. The fact that all the right-wingers who for years have been talking about Pizzagate and have been frothing at the mouth with crazy Hillary Clinton, the idea that Hillary Clinton owned a bunch of pizza parlors and was speaking in code on the debate stage to signal to her pizza parlors. They had all these QAnon signals and conspiracy theories. But now when we have actual evidence about sulfuric acid, actual evidence about ranches, actual emails between Elon Musk and Jeffrey Epstein, all of these quote-unquote conspiracy theorists are just gone. These people know this. I'm not saying the Epstein stuff is not a conspiracy theory, but the people who for the past decade have been dominated by these types of theories, they're not saying anything about it. These right-wingers, these QAnon people who have been so obsessed with it are blinding themselves to it. And yeah, the worrisome part is like Steve Bannon's connection to Jeffrey Epstein is so tight and so deep that if that doesn't signal something, that when Steve Bannon was helping Donald Trump ascend in American politics to the presidency for the first time, he was also running PR for Jeffrey Epstein. Yep. It's all such a sick bubble that should raise red flags in every American's mind. It's not even, this is a beyond politics. The fact that Donald Trump's key advisor was Jeffrey Epstein's PR guy, Donald Trump's new guy, Elon Musk, for the first 120 days was also emailing with Jeffrey Epstein. Donald Trump's new Fed chair pick was emailing with Jeffrey Epstein. Howard Lutnick was also visiting the island after he lied about it. It's like if you want to be in the Trump administration, it's a prerequisite that you had to be emailing with Epstein at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like you had to check a box on a form to be like, I knew Jeffrey Epstein.
Yes.
But I think what it shows me is that there's a powerful class of people, the Epstein class. This is not, you know, a new talking point now. I've been saying this for weeks, but so is like John Ossoff and Ro Khanna and yourself. But they win no matter what. And to me, the Epstein class is bigger than just what happened on Epstein's Island. It's that these people just get away with everything. Yes, the abuse of little girls and little boys, which is horrendous, but murder and violence. They're also rigging the U.S. economy for themselves. If you're wondering why your paycheck isn't going as far and why everything is so expensive, it's also because of the Epstein class. If you're wondering why our infrastructure is falling apart, it's also because of the Epstein class. And on the tariffs, just to tie these two topics together for a second, Howard Lutnick bet against the tariffs. He literally owns a bunch of rebate checks, like leaves bets on rebates. So if the U.S. government does pay out rebates, he's going to make a significant windfall because his own government policies fail, which is crazy to me. So he wins no matter what. And that's what happens here. Even with Prince Andrew, this is what broke me the other day. When I was reading up on Andrew getting arrested, I found out he had his title stripped, which I knew, but he also lost the private land in Windsor that he lived on. And they moved him to another private facility that he owned. So even when he was banished from his own family and lost his royal titles, he still got a free house with servants and food paid for the rest of his life. So this class of people always wins while everybody else gets fucked. And to this class of people, and I'll hand it back to you, Adam, is partisan politics is just a game to them. They don't actually care who's a Democrat or a Republican. They care about making sure that they're doing okay and they're supporting one another. So we're just like chess pieces to them. We're a game of checkers. That's all that it is.
I want to break some news. Donald Trump just sent out a Truth Social post approximately 25 minutes ago exactly. So while we were kind of gearing up to do this, he sent out this post. He said, based on a thorough, detailed, and complete review of the ridiculous, poorly written, and anti-American decision on tariffs yesterday, he goes on to say, after many months of contemplation, we will be raising the tariff price from 10% worldwide to a fully allowed and legally tested 15% worldwide. Are we kidding? Are we joking here? During the next short number of months, the Trump admin will determine the issue and make new legally permissible tariffs. He's increasing out of spite. He is increasing global tariffs. Just think about the point I made earlier about the two different trade zones, how the United States is a big red no-go zone. Do not go through the United States versus the rest of the world, which is sitting at about a 2.5% like ceiling of a tariff. This dude is losing his mind, doubling down, frothing at the mouth, and going into Mad King mode, and they are going to lose the midterms because of it.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, ask the average American who pays the tariffs, and they know the answer to that, which is you and I and everybody else is paying the tariffs, and now they're going to get even worse. But because this has neutered his presidency, he's backed up into a wall, and he's lashing out. And so him, again, just deciding on a whim, essentially, to change it from 10 to 15% on global tariffs is really stupid. And I'll add two thoughts to this. One is economical and the other one is political. But on the economic front, they love to talk about how cheap gasoline is right now. They go, oh, gasoline's down whatever 10% or whatever it is on the year. It's really down, you know, maybe 10, 15 cents. So it's not nothing, but it ain't a ton. And what I like to remind people is, yes, it's great that gas prices are cheaper, but the average car payment in this country has risen to $750 to $800 a month. So what's the value of cheaper gas if your car payment is 20, 30% more expensive than it was 2, 3, 4 years ago? And so they don't understand that the American people, when they balance their budget, they're not just thinking about eggs in a vacuum. They're not thinking about bread in a vacuum. They're not thinking about their mortgage payment in a vacuum. It's all of it together. So if you pull this lever and this one thing gets less expensive, like gas prices, but everything else shoots forward and I can't afford to buy a house, I can't afford to send my kids to college, I can't afford to put food on the table, people are going to turn on you pretty goddamn quickly. And he doesn't understand that. Then on the politics of this, these new tariffs, this now, according to you, this update from you is 15% now globally, which is just so stupid and petty of him. The way that the mechanism that they're using to do these tariffs is they're basically allowed to run with them for a certain period of time. I think it might be like 100 and some days, maybe like 145 days or something like that. When they expire, Congress has to vote on whether or not to approve the tariffs and keep them in place. So what he's done is created a doomsday scenario for Republicans in the fall. Yep. Where a couple of weeks before an election, they're going to have to vote on whether or not to raise the American people's taxes and either piss off the MAGA base and send them home or piss off the 70, 80% of Americans who are tired of paying higher taxes.
Yeah, yeah. Very, very good points. And I want to ask you, on the final topic we were going to discuss after the intense news that just broke and the insane moves from our president, J.D. Vance flew to Rome so we could invite Pope Leo to America 250. And I missed this news due to the travel, but the Pope declined and said he was going to spend time with migrants instead. This might be the second worst experience J.D. Vance has had with the Pope. Remember?
Well, at least Pope Leo's still alive.
Yeah. Oof.
I think it's important to remind people that J.D. Vance's worst 24 hours that would have sent me personally into a personal crisis was he greeted his Ohio State Buckeyes at the White House with the national championship trophy, which they won from my Notre Dame Fighting Irish, which I'm really mad about. And he broke the national championship trophy 12 hours later, met with the Pope. And like an hour after he met with the Pope just died. Oh. That would send me, a Catholic football fan, I would question everything about my life. And J.D. Vance just keeps rolling on like the tool that he is. But look, yeah, he flew out to the Vatican. They wanted to make the Pope a prop in their America 250 propaganda thing, whatever they're planning this coming summer, which, like, I'm going on vacation. I'm going to be at a national park. I'm not going to watch any of this shit. And the average American probably isn't either. But they wanted to invite him. And Pope was basically like, no, I'm not going to come. I'm going to go spend time with migrants on July 4th. And that's the message that we get from a strong American leader on the international stage, of empathy over cruelty, of somebody smart enough to know they're not going to be used as a political prop in an election year by fascists. And if you watch, the White House put out this really awkward video of J.D. Vance mingling with Pope Leo and giving him the letter from Trump inviting him. It's great because he hands Pope Leo the letter, and Pope Leo goes, oh.
Holy Father, hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good. So good to see you.
Welcome.
Yeah. A couple of things. First of all, this is a letter from the President and First Lady inviting you to come to New York. Many things to do, but wanted to make sure I gave you that letter.
At some point, yeah.
Of course. Of course.
So this, of course, is Chicago Bears jersey with your name. And
tried to sign it with a pattern, but they got a little nervous.
So I guess there's our kid right there, Ewan.
Okay.
You can probably imagine in the United States, people are extremely excited about you and about your
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. the original bronze sculpture.
And sets it off to the side like he'd just been given like the shittiest gift from a relative that he didn't care about at all. And then he gives him another gift. It's like, he's like, this is a Bears jersey. Publio's like, yes, I'm familiar with the Bears. Like, it's just like, it's so awkward. And also just a good reminder that JD Vance has negative Riz. Just negative Riz, can't connect with anybody, just an absolute loser. But again, to me, it's the, and I say this as a Catholic, I'm like, I probably already said this, but I'm practicing Catholic, is for the conclave to appoint an American Pope at this moment in time, when America is the primary antagonist on the world stage, makes such a huge difference to create an on-ramp for people of faith to get off of the MAGA train. And every time this happens, I think it puts another dent in the MAGA coalition at a pretty significant level.
Yeah, and he's from Chicago. He's from our great city, which is awesome. You took the words out of my mouth when you said that J.D. Vance has no Riz. I was quite literally going to say that exact thing, because the other day on stage, he tried to make a joke making fun of AOC. And in the process of making fun of AOC for stuttering for like 4 seconds, he had an awkward 15 seconds of zero laughs, zero claps, just no Riz whatsoever. He was like, oh, I was about to come out here and start stuttering, but then I realized I shouldn't start stuttering. And then he looked over at Trump. Nobody laughed. Nobody laughed at J.D. Vance. Nobody cares about this guy. He's incredibly Rizless. And I think that that's going to play into the 2028 elections. Honestly, Trump has stayed away from clearly endorsing J.D. Vance in a very intentional manner. And I think it could be for a few reasons. Number one, he doesn't want to just hand it to J.D. Vance. He wants there to be actual competition between Vance, Rubio, and other people. But I think number two, he's maybe just not impressed with J.D. Vance that much. I think he's more impressed with the Marco Rubio types. There was a speech that Marco Rubio gave in Munich, Germany. And when Trump was asked about Marco Rubio and J.D. Vance, he only started to butter up Marco Rubio. He was like, well, Rubio gave an amazing speech. That was a great speech that Marco Rubio gave. So while realistically, J.D. Vance is likely going to be the 2028 candidate, right now, he has no Riz. And I think that's going to come bite him in the ass compared to the Democratic candidates who... we're obviously still figuring our shit out. We've got a huge ideological battle that we're going to go through. We're going to broaden the coalition, hopefully, and make sure that we just have a great, charismatic candidate who excites the American people. I think we're going to whoop them in 2026 and 2028. And I want to hear your idea of, like, as we're getting closer and closer to the primaries, I know we're not even to the midterms yet, but which candidates do you have an eye on right now? Because I've been liking the clips of Ossoff, John Ossoff of Georgia, I've been seeing. Raphael Warnock of Georgia is great. J.B. Pritzker of our great state of Illinois could run a great campaign. The governor of Illinois, J.B. Pritzker, is a billionaire himself, but he could use that to run a campaign where he's like, I'm not taking any money from any special interest groups. F the housing lobby, F this lobby, F AIPAC. I'm not taking any money from any of these motherfuckers. And then what he does is... just runs on the American people. I just want to help the American people. We, of course, have Gavin Newsom, who's running as a fighter against Donald Trump. AOC may I don't know if AOC is going to run. She seems maybe. What are your thoughts here?
Yeah, well, I think we've got an embarrassment of riches on the Democratic Party side, and it's time to elevate the next generation of Democratic leaders. So I'm really excited for this fight. I'm a bit of a Newsom skeptic. I appreciate what he's done over the last couple months to fight in Prop 50. I think his social media team is amazing. Yeah. He's actually the perfect example of I like his team more than I like him, which is very rare. I think if Newsom can define his vision for America that rises above that sort of like way that a lot of people just instinctively hate California, I think we'll be in a better spot. He'll be in a better spot to be a serious competitor in that primary. But I really like AOC. I've always liked AOC. I think she's blossomed into an incredible legislator. I do think, like, if you're her choice is basically, do I take a slam dunk shot at a Senate seat? Or do I take, like, for anybody who's running, even if they're a front runner with a ton of money and great infrastructure, it's a complete crapshoot whether or not you win a presidential primary.
I think you go for the Senate.
Yeah, I think I would go for the Senate because AOC's also young. So, like, take another 10 years. Build up your foreign policy chops. I didn't think her speech in Munich was bad or anything, but obviously now that's a narrative that's out there. I really like Mark Kelly. I think what Pete Hegseth did to elevate Kelly was really stupid. I've become fully John Ossoff pilled. I actually met John Ossoff last week and fell in love with him in his eyes. He's a beautiful human being.
When's the wedding?
When's the wedding? You got to make the old we'll go to Vermont joke, but you know, gay marriage is legal everywhere now. So I just fell back at a 16-year-old me for a second.
No, but he's great. He's great.
He's great. Every speech that he gives is a must watch. And his framing of the Epstein class, I think, has been important to help me kind of get to the next step of how I want to talk about this stuff. So I like him. I really like Gretchen Whitmer. And I know, I think at this point, she's a bit of a dark horse. I don't know if she's going to run or not, but she is so popular in the state of Michigan. Like, I see a 62% approval rating in a battleground state. And I go, I gotta see how that plays on the national stage. But even just beyond that, I'm going to be like a single issue voter, basically, in the 2028 race, which is, who do I think is going to use power the way that these people use power to break the Epstein class and help improve people's life? If I think for a second that the person that I'm supporting is a technocrat or is going to play by the same set of rules the Democrats have been playing for the last 20, 30 years, I will not support them. So I'm going to be watching out for who can show that to me. And I think, to be honest with you, I've been involved in basically every presidential election in one way or another since I was 18. I think I'm probably going to sit this one out. I don't think I'm going to like jump on a race immediately. I'm going to make somebody kind of earn my support. And then if they want to offer me something, I might go do it. But I don't know that I want to jump into that. I'd rather just focus on House and Senate races, because we have a lot of Senate races in 2028 that we got to win. And if we're going to elect a Democratic president, we got to have a big blue wave in 28 and 26 to do that.
Yeah, we've got some Senate races in Illinois that are happening right now, too. It does feel better to kind of, you know, push a candidate in a Senate race or a race that is in a state you live in or a local race, because you feel like you're going to the events, you're pushing towards something in a local state manner. But it's going to be an interesting, interesting race in 2028. I guess my ideal for a candidate, what would excite me is, and I agree with you, someone who can take it to the Epstein class, but I want to take it a step further. Someone who can kind of challenge powerful interest groups overall, challenge the structure of money in politics overall, because I think Micah and I have been working on a framework where that's basically where most of the problems come from. Most of the problems come from these disproportionately powerful interest groups who are lobbying the politicians to get their way and stop any real progress on housing. A lot of the housing process, progress can be made in ways J.B. Pritzker did. J.B. Pritzker the other day was not scared of like any of these lobbyists, not scared of realtors, any of these groups. He decided to come out with an affirmative new housing plan to build new housing, more housing, to deregulate and make sure that that we're able to do that. So I think that a candidate who does that would really speak to me. And I think that kind of goes side by side with being very aggressive towards Republicans as well. So it needs to be multifaceted. A candidate who sticks it to Republicans, we can see accountability for Republicans and for the Epstein class, but somebody who also wants to fundamentally challenge the way money functions in politics. Somebody who is pro overturning Citizens United, even though that's the Supreme Court that has to do that, but somebody who understands that this is where a lot of the problems come from. And yeah, I mean, of course, there's the one-off bills like ban congressional stock trading. I think Ossoff would run a great anti-corruption campaign. A lot of people don't know this, but he helped run an investigative film company that investigated corruption a few years back. So that's why his messaging around corruption, in my opinion, is so clean and concise, because he understands exactly where we need to surgically target.
Yeah, and I think to your point, it's about the use of power and what you're willing to do and how creative you want to be. Like, you want to overturn Citizens United. Like, Citizens United is one of the most disgusting rulings in the history of the Supreme Court. Money is not speech. If you give Jeff Bezos a million times more speech than I do, it is not free speech. It is not equal. And the only way to do that, though, is to add additional Supreme Court seats, because Brett Kavanaugh is like 52. He's not going anywhere. Yeah. And the truth is, they have stolen multiple Supreme Court seats from the Democratic Party. There's nothing in the Constitution that dictates the number of Supreme Court seats. And as much as I hate doing it, I would show up and I would pack the shit out of the Supreme Court. Now, the point that I've made to, and I've said this to every Democratic politician who will listen, I said it to the Democratic Lieutenant Governors Association, all the lieutenant governors, they were like, their mouths were like wide open, because politicians are usually very short-term thinkers, right? What gets me a good news cycle? What gets me a good fundraising email? When's my next fundraising deadline? That's how a lot of them think. It shouldn't work that way, but it does. And when you see, and like somebody in the comments just said, term limits, expand the court, you know, get rid of the filibuster, et cetera. And like, I am pro doing all of those things, but that is step one of a like 5,000 step plan. Because if you get rid of the filibuster and the only thing we do is like raise the minimum wage with it, then 4 years later, if Republicans take power again, now you've got a worse version of Donald Trump with a more conservative Congress that also doesn't have the filibuster. So everything becomes 1,000 times worse than it is right now. The filibuster saves us. So either we take the necessary steps to reshape the government and do things like make DC a state and make Puerto Rico a state and make Guam a state and do reapportionment in the House and fix our election laws, break the voter suppression that happens in Mississippi that makes it hard for Black people to vote in the state. There are a lot of things that we can do. We've got to have it all lined up in a row. It's got to feel the same way that all of Trump's executive actions felt to us last year, where he was doing all of this shit to walk back all of Biden's legislative agenda when he was trying to hurt people, when he was trying to put money in his pocket. We got to do that, but make people feel the impact in our lives and stabilize our democracy. So if you get rid of Citizens United because we have a new Supreme Court, boom, whole new ballgame.
Yep.
If Republicans can't bank their entire campaigns on super PACs,
yeah,
the corruption that they have, Democrats will wash over them because we have a stronger small dollar donor game. Most of the money in Democratic politics right now for the biggest candidates on the planet, like Bernie Sanders, Mallory McMorrow, Peggy Flanagan, John Ossoff, James Tallarico, they're coming from small dollar donors. So that's what you need there. And I think we can break them there. And I would rather that the primary driver of money in politics be people donating $5, $10, $15 at a time. Even as frustrating, like I run an online fundraising company, you know this, Adam, like a lot of the fundraising programs that Democrats run are skeevy, and I agree with that. But it's better than letting like one fat cat in DC with this big cigar who's making deals with everybody gets so much money. It's better than letting Elon Musk control our government.
Absolutely. I totally agree with your analysis. And I think that's a good place to leave it. We've broken down a lot regarding our affirmative vision for the Democratic Party. And I think we should keep having these conversations over and over and over. It's kind of my favorite type of conversation to have because we're both people who have influence. We know people within the party. We have an audience and we're able to get feedback from our audience, read the comments, respond to the comments, internalize them, then actively push the Democratic Party in one way or another. So if you guys want to join the movement, make sure you subscribe to either Mike Nellis on Substack, hit the like, is it subscribe, follow. And if you're watching this on YouTube after the fact, subscribe to both of us below this video. So thank you guys so much. Thank you, Mike. These are great chats.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Adam. I appreciate you.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players' $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.